Vous écoutez une transmission du programme Longueur d'onde avec Guillaume Anglais sur la poste radio Resonance, modulation fréquence 104,4 MHz à Londres. Voi sentite una trasmissione radio della programma Lunghezza d'onda con Guglielmo Inglese sulla stazione Risonanza, modulazione frequenza su 104,4 MHz a Londra. Sie hören der Radioprogramm Wellenlänge mit Wilhelm Englisch vom Sender Resonanz. Frequenzmodulation 104,4 MHz in London. You are listening to the radio broadcast Wavelengths with William English on the station Resonance 104.4 FM in London.
Good afternoon. I'm William English, and this is Wavelength, a weekly program repeated on Tuesdays at 7:30. I'm joined today by Ian Bone. Ian Bone was a founder member and one-time leader of the anarchist group Class War, who achieved notoriety in the 1980s. And a quote from possibly the gutter press. Ian, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but for the first time since the Angry Brigade bombings of the 1970s, anarchism was perceived as a threat to the British establishment. I don't know where that quote's from.
Oh, I'm quite happy with that.
Yeah? All right. Pull the mic to you a bit.
That's yeah, quite it. Happy with that quote.
Okay. And tomorrow, Saturday, May the 10th, there will be a day of talks and discussions at the Conway Hall, under the heading 1968 and all that, be realistic, demand the impossible, starting at 10 a.m. And Ian Bone will be there to deliver a talk at around 1 p.m. Ian, can you give us a resume briefly of what the talk will be about? Or
yeah, I'll be talking about, I was a student in Swansea in 1968, and I think everything else is focused around London, Paris, Rome, Berlin. And it was a lot different being a student revolutionary outside London and in London. For example, if you were in London and had long hair, you could pose about. If you were in Swansea and had long hair, you'd hide because you'd get beaten up on the street. So I should be given an alternative perspective of 1968 from Swansea perspective.
Right. You were a student there. But then you kind of settled, I think, didn't you?
Yeah, I stayed in Swansea from 1965 to 1980.
Right. And what sort of, were you involved with miners' disputes or anything, or what was the politics like there at that time?
Well, we were anarchists. We went through the sort of fashions of the time. We were student revolutionaries in 1968, and then when the May events in Paris happened, we realised we didn't know any workers. So we adopted a workerist pose, and we put on donkey jackets and pretended we were all horny-handed tons of soil. And then we had lots of fun. I think anarchism always offers fun as much as hard work. So we went through all the stages from squatting to men against sexism, to claimants' unions, to campaigns around the Angry Brigade, right through all the stuff in the 70s. Then by which time I moved to London during the 80s, got involved in the miners' strike, started Class War, and then been at it ever since.
Right. And at that time, I think you were a member of a punk band as well, weren't you? So was that sort of in the 70s, or was that much later?
Yeah, we were sort of pre-punk, really.
Yeah.
Along with Shaken Stevens, one of the progenitors of punk. We were called the Living Legends, and we've had a sort of an occasional existence ever since, over the last 25 years.
Oh, you still play?
We still play occasionally, oh, right. Yeah. But we'll be playing outside the 1968 events at 6 o'clock tomorrow night.
Oh, right. Right, okay.
Back to the streets where we belong.
Yeah, it's still called The Living Legends.
Still called The Living Legends, yeah.
And who were your musical influences at the time then? You mentioned Shaking Stevens, but what about the MC5 and things like that?
Yeah, I guess out of the old 60s stuff, it would be MC5 and the old political hippie stuff. And one hesitates to mention it, but you have to mention Hawkwind and stuff like that.
Oh, yes.
The Free Festival scene.
Yeah.
Nick Turner and stuff that come out. Them really punk, really. So we just made our way. We're more like Chaz and Dave meets Lonnie Donegan than punk.
Right. Okay. And are you quite happy to be associated with the sort of broad left grouping at the Conway Hall, or do you feel a bit kind of outside of that?
Well, when we're anarchists, I mean, we're going to go along to the Conway Hall, the spirit of fraternal spirit, and let all the schisms and splits of the last 40 years go by the wayside. That's till 6 o'clock, then we'll have a few pints, and then we'll sort the bastards out.
Right, okay. So what was your position in 1968? Did you identify with the anti-Vietnam War movement and the French events, or did you tend to be suspicious of anything outside anarchism?
No, we were all hippies in 1967. It was all peace and love. But the Vietnam War had an amazing politicising effect over that sort of autumn, winter, 67 and 68. I mean, you saw signs of Agent Orange being dropped on Vietnamese villages, people being napalmed by a superpower, and pacifism and hippieism seemed like a dilettantish not to get involved in the wider struggle.
Yeah.
So we were involved in the anti-Vietnam War movement, the two Grosvenor Square demonstrations, and the May events in 68 really seemed like worldwide revolution was possible, supremely optimistic. I heard that the anarchists had burnt down the stock exchange in Paris, and I strode into the coffee bar at Swansea University with a real jaunty air, say, with a sort of I told you so attitude, the revolution would be here by the end of the week. It wasn't, but it wasn't for lack of trying. It was, looking back on my life, I'd say that summer of 68 was the most supremely optimistic political thing, because real change did seem possible, whereas at the moment, for anyone young, it looks like a hard slog to see political change on the agenda.
So in 67, you would have called yourself a hippie or not?
Yeah, I was an out-and-out hippie with me bell-bottoms and long hair.
Yeah. So, but you quite quickly changed into what could be called a fairly violent sort of...
Street Fighter Man. The Rolling Stones produced Street Fighter Man. I mean, it was much more fun anyway to be out throwing rocks than taking drugs with loads of boring people talking about the colours you could see and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And loads of people did change. I think in our anarchist group in Swansea in 67, we had about four people. By May 68, we had something like 150 people. We took three coachloads of people up to the anti-Vietnam War demonstration in Grosvenor Square, all the way up the M4, flying our black and red flags from the roof, despite the driver telling us to take them off. We didn't.
Okay. And you've brought along a colleague of yours today, who we should call Amy. Good afternoon, Amy.
Afternoon.
And Amy represents the Class War Youth Death Brigade. Can you explain briefly why is it called the Death Brigade?
Well, there actually is no meaning behind it whatsoever. I know that's probably not the answer you were looking for. But there's actually nothing behind it.
Can I ask how old you are?
I'm 14.
Okay. And but are you like an offshoot of Ian's class war movement? You kind of identify with that or
Yeah.
Yeah. So you've come out of class war, a direct result of class war.
We went to like a meeting, like me and like other youth, and we like formed in the first meeting. So
okay, and what do you get involved in mostly? What's your sort of what kind of activities you?
What like demonstrations and
yeah,
stuff
yeah.
like whatever they're doing. Like we haven't organised anything like ourselves yet, but.
Okay, but I think you were saying earlier that you kind of got corralled by the police at some event recently, is that it?
Yeah, on last Friday on the May the 2nd for uh-huh. the when Boris got elected.
Oh, yes, yeah. Ian, did you go along and throw rocks at Boris? Or?
There was an opportunity to do that because we got moved on by the police. I mean, I think that one of the key changes from 1968... till now is a change in policing. I was looking at the film of the Grosvenor Square riot in 68 and asked the director if the police had tried to get copies of the film afterwards to identify troublemakers and arrest them. He said, no, not at all. In 68, if you didn't get nicked, you got away with it. Now it's almost impossible to protest in this country. Outside County Hall the other night, there was 40 van loads of riot police. There's a very wide highway outside City Hall. There was, demonstrators were just against the sea, the river wall, really. Police came along, swept everyone away, saying it would be, you were blocking the highway. People were corralled for 3 or 4 hours. I mean, virtually, it's the beginnings of like a police state. It's virtually impossible to protest in this country now, and that's the big change from 68 till now.
Yeah.
And it's a problem that the people protesting haven't got their heads around yet, how to sort of circumvent the overwhelming sort of numbers.
Was that corralling, did that sort of start at that the Oxford Circus event, or was it John Lewis? When was that? A few years ago now.
Yeah, well, it goes right. The police changed their tactics post-miners' strike, really. During the miners' strike, they stopped people travelling north. There was a famous Dartford interchange where they intercepted people heading north. And now they just prevented, they stop you getting there on the grounds there may be a breach of the peace. And they film you in advance, right in your face, they film you afterwards. They know.
Strictly speaking, it's not quite legal, is it, to actually set up roadblocks and block people?
No, I mean, the police ignore their own, you know, they I mean, it's virtually impossible. They've got this sock par thing when houses of parliament, you can't demonstrate within so many hundreds of yards of parliament. If this stuff was going on in another country, then there'd be uproar about it. If it was going on in Burma, they show films of Burma, the police moving people along, there'd be uproar. Because it's happening here right outside City Hall. It just goes by the board. It's virtually impossible to protest in this country anymore.
Right. And there's an outline of class wars activities in Stuart Holmes' book, The Assault on Culture. And you get sort of placed in history alongside early anarchists and Dadaists and letterists. What do you think of Stuart's account? Is it sort of reasonable? Or?
No, it's sort of up his own arse art wank, basically. It's just rubbish.
Is it?
Yeah.
Really?
I mean, we don't identify. I mean, who are the letterists? I mean, who knows of the letterists? I saw, funny enough, the other night I saw a film by Isidore Isou.
Oh, yeah.
It was part of the Anger Brigade film. It was a short film about the events of 1968 in Paris. It was totally incomprehensible. It was jeered off. It was absolute rubbish. We had nothing to do with that tradition. The Dadaists a bit more. In terms of class wars, always had a sense of humour and has looked not just to do stereotypical demonstrations, but to do amusing, funny things to sort of to discomfort the rulers. I think we far more identify with someone like Jaroslav Hasek, who wrote The Good Soldier Schweik, and for a prank established a thing called the Party for Peaceful and Moderate Progress within the Bounds of the Law. And it's things like that which are amusing in history to identify, certainly not with Stuart Holmes' ragbag of old rubbish.
Right, OK. The first issue of Class War featured a slogan, "Now is the time for every dirty, lousy tramp to arm himself with a revolver or knife and lie in wait outside the palaces of the rich and shoot or stab them to death as they come out." This is a paraphrase from part of a speech given by the 19th century anarchist Lucy Parsons to the poor of Chicago. Would you still print that today?
No, I'm bloody well wouldn't. I mean, you get nicked.
Exactly.
It was incredible. I mean, what you could get away with in the early 80s. That was the second issue. The first issue was, "Let us destroy the avenues where the wealthy live." But even in 82, when that was printed, the printer wanted it out the printing shop, pretty sharpish.
Really?
But, I mean, you go on the streets like that now, I mean, you'd be probably facing 10 years for incitement to murder.
Right.
You couldn't get away with the kind of stuff. I mean, we carefully catched it as it was an historical quote,
as you mentioned,
from Lucy Parsons, which is our get-out clause. We were just... So the quote's in big letters, and there's a tiny Lucy Parsons underneath.
Right.
But you wouldn't get away with that now, without a doubt. I mean,
So, yes, so that must be quite... Are you still publishing Class War?
Yeah, we're still publishing Class War.
But in effect, you have to be very careful what you say, more careful now than at any other time.
I'd say so, because we came very close to getting done for incitement to riot during the miners' strike and the riots of 85. But they've tightened up on all the anti-terrorism stuff now. I mean, people are arrested for just reading stuff, for books they've got in their possession, stuff like that. Yeah, I mean, if you sat on the tube reading that copy of Class War, now is the time for every dirty, lousy tramp.
Yeah.
Quite well be nicked. You might put the person opposite you into distress or something.
Yeah.
So you have to be a lot more careful. I mean, it's not just the protest. What you can write about is circumvent a lot more. It's a lot hard to be in your face. You can be sort of, you know, peaceful protest kind of stuff like the SWP and boring stuff that no one reads. But if you want to be in your face, it's really hard to say what you want these days.
So you do feel somewhat compromised?
Well, I wouldn't print that now. No, you'd definitely be looking at 5 years. No one would print it in their right mind.
Right. What about broadcasting it?
I'm glad to say you said it, not me. I'd just like to make it clear here that was a quote from Lucy Parsons.
A quote from Lucy Parsons. But when was she in the 19th century?
That it was William.
No.
Who should be taken away.
Amy, what do you think of this?
Get him out of a hole,
let's,
Amy.
Let's move over to Amy quickly. And are you involved in the newspaper or you know publishing or?
No.
No. Okay.
Not because they don't want me to, but just like no.
But do you feel? Is there, I mean, do you have any new ideas, particularly that are less to do with the old class war? Do you see anything wrong with perhaps the way class war have operated in the past? And perhaps you have a different attitude now.
Well, the anarchist movement in general, like not just class war, but just in general, I think less class war than other groups actually, but quite a lot of groups have like this real like mistrust of the internet, like completely.
Oh, yeah.
That like the internet can never ever ever help us and it's like our absolute enemy. And I don't agree with that at all. I think it like we can actually use it like in a way which is really helpful to us, and it's actually like something that could be kind of used to like much greater effect than it is.
Right. Okay.
They're coming to nick you, William.
Yeah, I'm slightly worried about
it.
Actually,
live
yeah.
on air. For the first time in this country, a radio DJ has been arrested live on stage. Let me go. It's only a quote.
Okay. The Christopher Gray book about the situationists leaving the 20th century, probably another journal that you wouldn't have much time for, but it ends fairly despondently, I think, with a line about the primrose path to terrorism. As though this was or is a sort of logical next step for would-be revolutionaries. Given that a handful of people armed with Stanley knives have changed the course of world history, how do you regard the attack on the World Trade Center?
I've always rejected terrorism because people who act as terrorists always act on behalf of rather than instead of the working class. So it's basically throwing them the towel in. You despair. I mean, a lot of people after 1968 in this country, after the failure of the second big demonstration in Grosvenor Square, you can see the roots of the Anger Brigade from that. Because they became frustrated with mass action achieving nothing. They can see that as a direct result. I mean, as regards the kind of Muslim fundamentalist attacks on the World Trade Center, it's a load of rubbish. I mean, we've got nothing in common with Muslim fundamentalism. All religion is diabolical. Religious wars have caused more so than most. We've got no time for the rule of the mad mullahs at all.
Right. But what about the Angry Brigade?
Well, I think the Angry Brigade tried to associate their bombings with ongoing class struggle. They attacked the Minister of Employment at the time, a lot of industrial relations struggle and so on. But again, it was a few self-appointed revolutionaries acting on behalf of the working class. And John Barker of the Angry Brigade has said since, looking critically back, at their bombings, he said that petrol bombs are far more democratic than dynamite, meaning a mob on the street, a rioting mob, is a democratic expression of the people's will. A few people sneaking alarm clocks outside people's houses at 3 o'clock in the morning is a sign of failure. And I think there's no room for terrorism. What we want is mass action, collective action on the streets to change the world. Substituting one lot of rulers for another lot who self-appointed leaders has been shown historically to be just as bad as what we've got now.
Okay. Well, you've brought in a CDR of... these are some tracks by the Living Legends.
They are, yes.
Which include... One is a very intriguing title. Gaza is a pig... I won't say that because
we get into trouble already, really.
I am indeed, yes.
Don't compound it, man. Go for the mercy angle.
All right. So you suggested we play track two, which is Class War.
Yeah,
Shall we give this a listen and see?
Do.
So this is, when was this recorded?
It was in 1995 at the time in a miners' strike. But with the Tories coming back to power now, it's just as relevant now as it was then, I think. Very nice ragtime piano.
Of the miners, the Tories think they've got everything stitched up in the interests of their own class. They think they've smashed all the opposition, leaving as a safety valve the pathetic Labour Party and TUC to represent the interests of the working class. They think they're in for a peaceful summer to enjoy the yachting at Cowes, the Henley Regatta, the polo at Cowdrey Park, the show jumping at Badminton, champagne picnic hampers on the lawn at Glyndebourne, and an endless round of society balls and dinner parties. Meanwhile, we're supposed to remain within our ghettos, waiting for the gyro to come through the letterbox. Demoralised, grateful that we don't live in Ethiopia, and listening to Frankie Goes to Hollywood to let off some rebellious steam. Rich bastards. Unfortunately for you rich tow rags, this isn't the case. We always knew the TUC and Labour Party were on your side anyway. Wise up, B-Brag. You fucking mug. Yes, we are resentful and bitter and angry, but we aren't going to sulk away on our estates out of sight and mind, so you can enjoy another jolly good summer of swanky luxury. A huge explosion of class hatred and anger is building up, and when it erupts, it will make the 1981 riots look like a tea party. In the meantime, when you look out of your window, we'll be there. When you drive down the street in your Rolls, we'll be there. We have no demands to make of you. There's no reforms you can make to get rid of us. Our banners read only, "Behold your future executioners."
Okay, so that track was called Class War by Ian Bone and the Living Legends.
Indeed, a seminal track in one of its first airings.
Yeah. When was that recorded?
That was recorded after the miners' strike in 1985, when there was still a lot of hope because people were out on the streets throwing rocks and stuff.
Yeah.
Something we devoutly wish to see the return to shortly, with the Tories getting back in.
Right, yeah. Yeah, how do you see it at the moment? Do you think, is it going to cause more unrest?
I think it will. If you look at the, I mean, there's an interesting article in The Guardian today, the Bullingdon Club, which is a club at Oxford, and which Cameron, Boris Johnson, George Osborne went to. So our leader of London, the leader of the country, the Chancellor Exchequer, all went to a very small, elite, private school educated social club, men only at Oxford, and they're all our leaders. It's unbelievable that such a small stratum of society, when if it was seen anywhere else in the world, it'd be sort of an undemocratic, oligarchical clique. And so I think the prospects for naked class war back on the agenda are greatly enhanced by Boris Johnson and Cameron coming back on the scene. Basically, the toffs are in power now,
right,
and we've got a chance to get them out again.
Yeah. So you'll be playing with the Living Legends tomorrow?
We'll be doing an impromptu performance at Cookside Conway Hall at 6 o'clock tomorrow, probably doing our seminal classic Tory Funerals, I think.
Tory Funerals, what's that?
It's a celebration of dead Conservatives.
Right. So we're talking to Ian Bone, founder and former leader. Are you still leader?
No, not leader. We're anarchists.
Of course you are. Absolutely. Sorry, yes,
absolutely.
My mistake.
I'm just a rank and file foot soldier.
Okay. Foot soldier of class war. And Ian Bone will be talking at the Conway Hall tomorrow at 1 o'clock, along with numerous other speakers at the event 1968 and All That Be Realistic Demand the Impossible, a conference and book fair. For the full programme and list of speakers, go to www.1968andallthat.net, which brings us back to the internet, which seems to be a bit of an issue for Amy as opposed to Ian. Ian is of the old school.
Well, I think we're just stuck in a time warp, really. I mean, we're producing papers with inky pages and we're selling them on the streets for years. We'd probably be using a hammer and chisel on stone tablets. I mean, so I think, as Amy says, if we can use the internet to get across to people, then there's multiple possibilities there.
So does that mean, Amy, that you kind of you communicate with other your people in other parts of the world, possibly, or you just kind of it's a way of staying in touch with your friends, or?
There's a Death Brigade's blog, so.
Oh, right. What's the address of that? Can you give us the?
That's www.classisms.wordpress.com.
Okay. And but if anyone maybe just went for Youth Death Brigade, would they find it?
Yeah, if you Google Class War Youth Death Brigade, it'll come up.
Okay. All right. And anything planned for the future? In you know, any activities, demonstrations, or anything coming up? That's
The next thing is the Foxtons thing. There's a demonstration outside Foxtons on the
30th of May. Saturday the 30th.
Actually, I think it's the 31st.
Yeah.
What is Foxtons? Are we giving stuff away here? Perhaps we're sort of alerting the authorities to what is about to take place? Or
they know anyway.
Oh, okay.
It's a estate agent's.
Oh, right. Oh, is that Foxtons?
Yeah.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah.
Foxtons. Not Bruce Foxton of the Jam, who sent his kid to Eton after writing Eton Rifles.
No, so these are the ones with the minis?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, I mean, against the sort of gentrification and yuppification of big parts of London, the Foxtons are about the most objectionable estate agents going. So there's some action outside their estate agent's office in Islington on Saturday, May the 31st.
Okay. You expecting a big turnout? Or?
No. I think, but...
Well, the small the Death Brigade will be there, but at the end, how many people can you summon?
We're talking about small demonstrations. I think there will be 40 or 50 people there, but you know, we don't expect to get mass mobilisations in every target.
No. Okay.
Well, the interesting thing with youth is that I think about 6 months ago, we were talking to the class hall meeting, we realised there was no one under the age of 40 in the room. There's a whole generation of people from about 20 to 38 who sort of missed out on politics. And we were just mentioning the fact, and it's interesting now, there seems to be people much younger than that, you know, around sort of 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, actually getting involved in politics for the first time. And with the advent of the Tories sort of looking like they're going to get back in power, then we may see the return to some of the stuff we saw in the 60s, 70s and 80s, where sort of school kids poured out of streets, you know, schools onto the streets and got involved. So I think, you know, there's some promising signs there.
Right. Okay. Well, we're going to end with a track that you've brought in, sort of favourite...
Country Joe and the Fish, Country Joe McDonald. He's been at it for 40 years. He's a true revolutionary.
Yeah.
The soundtrack to 1968 for lots of people was this 1, 2, 3, What Are We Fighting For?
The Fish Cheer.
Yeah. It's a great track.
All right, well, thank you very much to Ian Bone and Amy for coming in this afternoon.
And bear in mind, this will be William's last ever broadcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Next stop, Belmarsh, I think. Got to try that. Okay.
At last, gotta go out, get those reds. The only good commie is one that's dead. And you know that peace could only be won when the golden ball the kingdom come.
And it's 1, 2, 3, what are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't.